This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, this is Alex Rodriguez, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thank you, Alex, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday, February 11th, 2022, just 2 days from Don's birthday. I'm Michael K., along with Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. And what a show we have today.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. Christopher Mad Dog Russo will join us at 4.
Yep, yep.
How about that?
How about that, Mikey?
You're get right.
How about that, Mikey?
Mike Tannenbaum at 5:30. How about that, Mikey?
Oh, we need to know his pick.
And then Richard DiPietro.
Yes.
We'll make the DiPietro and Rothenberg pick at 5:55.
Save DiPietro!
And in the 5:45 segment, Don, Peter, and I will make our picks for the Super Bowl.
Oh, sure.
It's so exciting. It's an exciting time to be alive. It really is.
Well, the numbers moved a little bit, right?
Gone down.
Yeah.
I saw it. Went to 3.5, and now it's gone back to 4. But it had gotten higher than that, too.
Isn't this always what happens, though? Like, the line comes out. The people get excited about the favorite very often. Favorite gets ballooned slightly. Then all of a sudden, the talking heads start going, no, I like the underdog. And then it starts swinging back around, and you end up landing basically in the same spot. I mean, there's no world, guys, I don't think, in which this thing ends up at 3 or it's obviously less than 3. That's not happening. So my guess is the lowest it gets is 3.5. Which is a negligible difference between that and 4.
I think that what's interesting about it, you know, I try to see what everybody's saying, and there's no clear-cut favorite among the quote-unquote experts. I mean, some people take the Rams, some people like the Bengals. Nobody seems, you know, as if the whole group of them are going toward one thing, and which should make for a good game. And, you know what, if I had never seen the whole playoffs unravel the way they have, I would think everybody would pick the Rams. I think people are picking the Bengals just on the pixie dust aspect.
Yeah. Well, and also who they're rooting for. Because outside of being a Rams fan, maybe Stafford finally getting a chance to win a Super Bowl after being stuck in NFL Siberia his entire career in Detroit. But really, the Rams they're just kind of thrown together, right? So there isn't anybody that's been there a long time that you're rooting for. The Odell and Von Miller and going out and get Matthew Stafford, where this Cincinnati team was, you know, built the right way. They didn't make a lot of trades or free agent signings. They drafted the quarterback. They drafted Chase, and it's all kind of coming together. They're the underdog. They've never won a Super Bowl. I think Cincinnati, to me, if I wasn't making a pick, I'd be rooting for Cincinnati. I mean, what is it with the Rams? They're 5 minutes ago, they were in St. Louis. 5 minutes before that, they were in L.A.
I think I'll disagree with you guys slightly.
Okay.
You know, at least on my logic for the Bengals. Yes, the pixie dust is part of it. You know, they have been just coming up with special moments for sure. But the Rams are also apt to underachieve. And they've done that several times this season, and even during the playoffs. You know, there's just a world in which I can picture if this was a talent contest, I think the line is bigger than 4 points. But football games have to be played. And the way the Rams actually play does not tend to week in, week out be like all the things we talk about on paper. When we talk about the level of talent from Cooper Kupp and Odell and what they have at receiver to Stafford, to their incredible defensive front and secondary, when you list everyone off, you go, oh, my God. But then you look up, and they're only a 4-point favorite, and there's a reason for that. Because they don't show up and generally beat teams badly.
Well, I would disagree with one aspect of that. They show up, and then they just really get conservative. That's the issue with them. And I don't know if it's Sean McVay, where he really tightens up a little bit the way he calls the game. There was, you know, they led – they blew a 24-point lead to the Bucs, so they showed up, and then they just blew the lead. the fumble by Akers. I mean, they almost gave that game away to the Bucs. So that bothers them. And even both teams have not been overly impressive. The Bengals have had a struggle just to get here. Both teams trailed in the conference championship going into the fourth quarter. Both teams. So it wasn't blowouts in any sense of the word.
Nope. It's unique. But by the way, all of that is why I am as excited for this random – I mean, let's be honest, guys. This is a random-ass Super Bowl, okay? And I am as excited for this random Super Bowl. I'm as excited as I've been for a Super Bowl in a long time because I think matchup-wise, it just presents what's going to amount into a real football game.
Yeah.
Not an awkward Super Bowl slog. I think this is going to be a really interesting – competitive game. I'm surprised when I hear people who don't give the Bengals a chance. You know, maybe that's biased because I just want this team to win because of my bet with Don. But I don't know, man. I've really been shown something by Joe Burrow. Listen, we're 10 years in still trying to figure out exactly what Stafford is. And obviously what happens Sunday is going to go a long way. And to me, that's the number one storyline in this game. Sunday goes a long way to what the Matt Stafford story is. But I think we already know where the Joe Burrow story is going.
I'm going to put it this way, Peter. I think this is going to surprise you. I am available to come over to your house on Sunday. I'm just saying.
I don't believe you are.
No, but I'm going to tell you why I am. Because the family is going on a vacation because the kids' school is off next week. So I'm being left here because obviously I have to do the radio show. So I didn't want to be a drag on them being in a hotel room for 4 hours doing a radio show. So I'm staying back. So they're leaving Sunday morning. I am totally alone.
I mean,
if you hand out like a legitimate invitation and tell me that Ballard's not there, I might show up.
Hold on. Do I have to disinvite Ballard if you're going to be invited?
Essentially, yes.
Now, is this story serious? Are you really going to be alone for Super Bowl Sunday?
Yeah. Is that sad?
Well, I want to have – let's talk this out because Don, I'm sure, knows you better than anyone. He, of course, is assuming, as most normal people would, you're bluffing about actually coming to my house. That's not even a real thought. So my question is, what are you actually going to do? Because it is a weird game to just sit around and watch by yourself.
I'm going to watch it by myself. First of all, you know I'm a COVID freak, so I don't want to go to any place with a lot of people. And, you know, if I come to your apartment, I will bring rapid tests and shove them up your nose.
I don't even think you're remotely considering it.
All right, fine. See, Don, that's not a friend. And if Don said, why don't you come over and celebrate my birthday with me, I might do it. But there's no invites my way. But that's cool.
You didn't exactly make it enticing by, you know, bringing, you know, quick views over and shoving swabs up people's nose just for you to grace their room and their party. I think, Peter, you wouldn't be rude to just say, all right, Michael, I'm good. You're welcome to come, but if we're going to have to all test for you to come, then just stay home.
I guess I'll just stay home alone.
No, I don't agree with that.
Really? For one person?
I'm fine testing if that's what he needs. I have tests here.
And ask your guests to do the same?
Well, it's only Ballard and Natalie.
And if I'm coming, Ballard's not there, so.
Okay.
Ballard is very COVID conscious as well. So
Ballard!
It could work.
Well, we'll talk about this later. I dug up some stats that I thought were interesting. I'm sure Don has seen these as well. This is the biggest stat to me in picking the Rams, so I'm going to pick the Rams. So according to NFL Next Gen stats, the Rams are first in pass rush win rate, which means they get to the quarterback. The Bengals, out of 32 teams, they're 30th in pass block win rate. We saw what the Titans did. And you could say that the Rams might have more firepower than the Titans, and they have the best defensive player, at least on the line. I don't want to say that because of Micah Parsons, but Aaron Donald's pretty special. Pretty special. So that's the stat that jumps out at me when I'm making this pick. How are they going to keep Joe Burrow upright? How are they going to do it? And the thing I credit Joe Burrow with, those 9 sacks against Tennessee, he never fumbled the ball. But all you need is one of those to get knocked out on the ground, scoop it up, and go in for a touchdown. And a whole tenor of the game changes. And everybody that's picking the Bengals, I don't know if you've noticed this too, Don, they're like assuming that the Rams are just going to have a big turnover or two.
Yeah.
Why? I know that, you know, Stafford has thrown some picks, and then that one game against Tampa Bay, they kept coughing the ball up. Akers, Cooper Kupp, I get it. But that doesn't mean that they're definitely going to do it against the Bengals. I mean, to make your pick based on something that is not necessarily an ironclad trend, I think it's a little sketchy. Well,
because what you're saying is you believe that they're going to get the breaks. To me, a turnover is a break. Now, sometimes a turnover happens because you're just so good. But a lot of times, Michael, it's kind of a fluke. How many times you see fumbles and they just get recovered and they're not even talked about? You get to the quarterback, you separate the ball, but the ball bounces back in the quarterback's belly and no harm, no foul. Interceptions that are dropped. And we don't go back and think about them, but they could be major turning points.
That's the thing. And by the way, they turned over Patrick Mahomes twice.
They did.
Two interceptions against the Chiefs. So I think that's probably factoring to people's brains that they think that it could happen again. And I think if you're smart, even if you like Cincinnati, you probably imagine they will need a turnover or two to win this game.
Now, on the other side, when Cincinnati has been sacked 5 or more times this season, they're 2-4. Now, one of the two that they won was against the Titans in the playoffs, but they lost to the Bears, the Browns, the Chargers, and the 49ers. The other win was against the Vikings. You get sacked that many times, it is hard. It is hard to win the game. And I mean, you're watching backwards.
And you have to give Burrow credit, but it's also something that you don't want to have to count on. How many times did he avoid the sack against Kansas City?
Right.
That could have been devastating and a rally killer, but he found a way to buy more time, run for the first down, or find Chase or find somebody out of the backfield to complete the pass. Now, that's part of the equation of how good a quarterback he is. But also, it just showed you that Kansas City did get to him. They just couldn't finish. I think the Rams are a better defensive team, and I think if you end up having that same scenario, he's going to go down. So I think that's what's swaying me, Peter, is because I saw what happened last year. Mahomes, to me, they were on their way to a second straight Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden he had no room to breathe. He's running all over the place, and it completely changed it. It kind of has that same feel to me. I think the Rams can do to Cincinnati what the Buccaneers did to the Chiefs last year.
The conversation about the Rams front is obviously a reasonable one, and probably, I think, for most people would be the reason they like the Rams. That will ultimately become a conversation not just about the Bengals line, but about Zach Taylor. And does he prepare? How good is Zach Taylor? Because he has an incredible opportunity to almost steal a Super Bowl this year when no one was expecting it. You've made it to the game. And he knows he has an offense good enough. I think we'd all agree, right? The Cincinnati offense is good enough to win a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can he protect that quarterback and come up with a scheme that allows them to move in a way where he's not sitting back there to have Aaron Donald on top of him all day? And that'll be – and by the way, that we talked about this earlier when I was doing my my pre-show FanDuel event with Chris Canty and Chris Carlin. You know, man, the pressure on Sean McVay to not get out-dueled by Zach Taylor, who seems to get left out of, like, the young, cool coach conversation, right?
It's off of Sean McVay's tree, too.
You're right. He's off the same tree, but he's never the sexy one to talk about. And I really think for Cincinnati to win this game would mean that Zach Taylor calls a fantastic game as well.
Another thing to look at, and a lot of people are not selling this that much, the Rams have an explosive offense. I mean, they have a real good running game. They've got outstanding wide receivers. Now, I don't know if Higbee's going to be able to play. That could be a big loss, but they have outstanding wide receivers, and they know what they're doing. And remember one thing. I thought that they were really, really good until they started turning the ball over against Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay has pretty good defense. So these are things that you have to look at as well. Now, on the flip side, I think you could move against the Bengals, guys, because look at what Patrick Mahomes did in that first half. If not for that dumb play at the end, they would have 35 points, right? So what are you doing? Because you have to ask yourself this question. I'll ask both of you this question. Did the Bengals defense, and we've been asking this question for 2 weeks now, did the Bengals defense get better in the second half against the Chiefs, or did Patrick Mahomes take that last play of the first half and completely lose his mind over it? Because if it's the latter, then I don't like their defense.
Yeah. I don't want to sit here and take anything away from Cincinnati. That would be unfair. But still, look at what they did. Carved them up in the first half. All right, you make adjustments. That's what good coaches do. But still, we're talking about Mahomes. Buffalo's got a terrific defense. They couldn't slow Mahomes down just a week before in the exact same building. Could not slow him down. Could not stop him, no matter how much time was left on the clock. So, and the reason why it's on the table, Michael, is we saw the beginning of the season for Kansas City, where the same quarterback looked lost. His footwork was a mess. He couldn't complete a pass. Looked like something was wrong. And there was actual conversation that he might have taken that Super Bowl beating with him into this season. And then eventually, he's just too good a quarterback. He figured it out. So, just doing the math, it sounds to me like he took what happened on that final play of the half with him into the half, and he never recovered. Michael, they scored 3 points at the end of the game. They shouldn't even have done that. He fumbled the ball. Talk about breaks. Cincinnati could have recovered, and they could have won the game right there. But, you know, give Cincinnati credit. They did a great job making the adjustments, but you can't tell me that Mahomes didn't have something to do with that.
Now, I've got some betting numbers, okay? So teams who have covered the spread in the past 12 Super Bowls, they have won the game outright as well. So last year, I believe that Tampa Bay was a 3-point underdog. So if they covered the spread, they won the game outright. That's the last 12 Super Bowls. Now, in Super Bowl history, the favorite is 27-26-2 straight up. Super Bowl underdogs of at least 3.5 since 2007, and that's what the line is right now, right? They are 6-0 against the spread and 5-1 outright.
What?
So interesting stuff to consider. Now, I wonder if Peter has an epiphany, Don, and says, I want to take the Rams, how he'd end up losing the bet. Can he change before, you know, 5:45? Can you change to the Bengals? Because if you change to the Bengals, Don, you can't lose.
We agreed, though.
It would not be gentlemanly. And we did not submit our picks before the show because we felt like we didn't have to.
Right.
Because we declared. So to me, us declaring back whenever that was, a week ago, that was we submitted it. Now, we said if anything changes dramatically, nothing has. The line has moved a little bit, certainly in my favor. But not enough that it's going to change anybody's mind. If God forbid, we found out that there was a significant injury or something happened where one of the quarterbacks couldn't play, I think we would make adjustments. But nothing like that, Peter, has happened, right? So
no.
I'm comfortable. I would not do that. And I don't think it'd be allowed. I think that would be frowned upon.
And nobody wants anything frowned upon.
No.
Who's on your T-shirt, Peter?
I'm glad you asked, Michael. It is the no longer with us, Brian Pillman, who was a fantastic wrestler back in the day in WCW and WWE, who is from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, there you go.
So
tying it all together, right?
My little homage to Cincinnati. Thinking about, wondering if I should make try to come up with an interesting Cincinnati chili dish on Sunday.
And then you could serve it with like one of Miss Hatton's beautiful NFTs that she has of the Manhattan skyline.
Yeah.
And then you could call it Skyline Chili, which is Cincinnati's top-selling thing. Yeah.
Wow. Because the Skyline Chili's the thing.
Yeah. How about that? And then you got to order some Grater's ice cream, too.
I've never been to Cincinnati. But I've been to Pittsburgh, which is like Cincinnati and Jays, right?
No, they're not the same.
No, I mean, no.
No, no.
Pittsburgh's much prettier than Cincinnati. Sorry.
Sacramento stinks.
Right.
Well, it's all the Allegheny, right? It just float down the river. You can get there, right?
You'd get there. Yeah, sure.
Is it the Allegheny, the Monongahela?
I don't know which one it is.
I think it's
I've been to Columbus. Is that like Cincinnati?
Oh, yes. That's what Paul O'Neill says.
You got to imagine my disappointment every time I go to Columbus, Peter. I'm promised that Paul O'Neill's going to be waiting there with a sign that says LaGreca. And it
never happens.
Never.
Rick
DiPietro, I've been to Columbus an inordinate amount of times.
Rick DiPietro just texted me. Said, can you imagine how much arm hair is going to be in that chili if Peter makes it?
Really? So he thinks my arm hair just comes off in everything I do?
Yeah.
Don't be Captain Literal Man with the jokes, okay? Nobody is suggesting that you're losing your arm hair. Far from it.
Oh, please. That would be upsetting.
All right, so we're all excited. We're going to take your phone calls, but the Knicks have obviously turned it around. A big win over Golden State. Golden State obviously took the Knicks for granted. The Knicks played well, and Julius Randle has played very well of late. And maybe, just maybe, everybody, that they take a deep breath and collect themselves because nobody got traded, because they should win on Sunday against Portland. Then the next game is against Oklahoma City, and then all of a sudden, Don, bing bong, they've won three in a row.
Because I know this fan base, Michael. Bong. I'm telling you. It's Saturday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon, 5:00 tip, I believe. Knicks and the Blazers. And then I believe it's Monday, Oklahoma City. By Tuesday, we're going to open the show with Knicks fans beside themselves. Three straight wins, Randle playing great. We're going to sneak into the play-in. I'm telling you.
I
know this
fan.
I know it. And they know it. The Garden knows it. That's why I told you they're going for it. They didn't make any deals. But if you think that they're going to convince Thibodeau to sit everybody and let the kids play and find out what we have in the final 30 games of the season, you're nuts. They're going to win three in a row, and they're going to start believe. And now you're going to be like, well, that there's an eight-game road trip, but they could beat Dallas. They could beat Sacramento. I'm telling you, I know this fan base.
Well, listen, I'll say this, though. I hope they get the opportunity to do that because they are in on this season still. You can tell the organization is. And we've been incredibly critical, so let's give credit where credit is due. Randle's been really good the last few games.
Yep, the last four games. And that's a nice win because Golden State's one of the best teams, and that's a tough place to play. I think the Knicks have not lost there since it opened, so they could finish this West Coast trip and not be, you know, just buried, because they could have been buried. They could have been buried.
But that note, don't lose to Portland.
No, if they lose to Portland, it erases it. Yeah, because everybody assumed they'd beat Portland.
Right.
And then the Nets yesterday, they lose to Washington. Ooh, I mean, it looked like a pro one of those G League games. Washington is bereft of talent with all the trades, and Porzingis didn't show up yet, and the Nets had Kyrie Irving, but wow. I mean, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, too, because, boy, Kevin Durant throws some shade at James Harden when he was doing the draft with LeBron.
Oh, my God.
He took Rudy Gobert. There were two guys left on the board. He took Rudy Gobert instead of James Harden. And then LeBron innocently goes, well, is he able to play? Isn't he hurt? And then Charles goes, oh, he's fine now.
That was just another example of why TNT is the best. Where else do you get what was happening last night?
That was hilarious. They did a great job.
You have the two best players in the league in the most awkward situation. I can't even think of anything similar to LeBron and KD sitting there going through the whole James Harden thing last night. It was bizarre.
Now, the Sixers have said that Harden will not play in the next two games, and then they'll reevaluate. Mm. Just optics. They don't want to rush him out there tonight and have him score 40. That would be a bad look. Simmons is going to be evaluated. They're going to try to get him up to snuff as quickly as possible.
But 10 in a row is still, that's tough.
Oh, it's hard to lose 10 in a row.
It's seriously.
But they've done it, and they've done it nicely. All right, let's tail off. What a big opening.
I enjoyed that.
A very exciting show. Anytime you have Chris Russo on at 4:00.
On TV.
Yeah, and that'll be on radio, too. And then you've got Tannenbaum at 5:30. You've got the ultra-articulate, really intelligent, funny, handsome Rick DiPietro at 5:55.
Save DiPietro!
What a description.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate on all fronts. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you, right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Don, big plans for the birthday?
Yeah, I got to go to Mom's.
You're going to go to Mom's? Are you going to watch the game there?
Maybe the beginning of the game. I don't know. Because, again, the kids got to get to bed and all. The game's not going to be till 6:30. So we're going to go a little earlier. Mom hasn't seen the kids since Christmas.
Right.
And I'll see my brother there, too, because he never got to see them at Christmas because there was this COVID scare at that particular moment where we weren't together. So, and then I'll probably be home in time for the game and enjoy it there with some birthday cake.
There you
ice
go.
Ice cream cake. Always get ice cream cake.
Ice cream. Carbone. Has to be like Fudgy the Whale?
No, no, no.
No? Okay.
You're not
can't go
fudgy
wrong
guy?
With Fudgy the Whale.
No, but we just get a nice, nice birthday cake. There'd be cake. There'd be paint the tail on the donkey. I don't remember ever saying that.
Well, you said it. It's right there. Let's go
oh,
to the
I don't
phones.
Doubt it.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Lou. We'll start with Lou in Manalapan. Lou? What's up, Lou?
Hey, guys. Hope everyone's well and excited for the game.
Yes.
I'm very excited. So my whole take on this game is I think a lot of last year's Super Bowl shows, it's kind of what Don was saying. Like, last year's Super Bowl tells me a lot about this year's Super Bowl in comparison to the Bucs. The Rams' pass rush is just unreal. And foolishly, last year I took the Chiefs and I thought the Mahomes effect would be enough. And I feel like Burrow is kind of getting that same case made for him where it's like, this guy's a very special quarterback. He's young. He's versatile. He's very good at just all, you know, all five tools of quarterback and getting the ball out of his hand, finding the receivers, everything. But the fact that he got sacked by a Tennessee defense, which was right in the middle of the pack, and, you know, that kind of exposed a lot to me. You know, they couldn't handle the Jets pass rush in whatever week they played. You know, they're the hot team for sure, but I really think that this game's going to come down to, you know, the playmakers on the Rams side. I think we might even see a defensive player as an MVP. I don't see any way that the Rams don't take that home field advantage and you know, do something
see,
with
but
it.
I'll tell you what, Lou, I don't believe in a home field advantage. The Super Bowl tickets go to everyone. Now, I did see that, you know, Darren Revelle tweeted out that the fewest tickets sold is to the Cincinnati area. So people from Ohio are not traveling. But even when it was a quote-unquote Ram crowd, and Super Bowl tickets are handed out differently or sold differently than just any other ticket. So I just don't think it's going to be a Ram crowd. Even when it's a Ram home game, it's not a Ram crowd. I don't think home field advantage has anything to do with it in this
game. Yeah, you would find it difficult to believe that it wouldn't. But I'm sure they're staying in a hotel. They're not staying in their own homes.
True.
All right, so that's going to feel like a road game. As you said, the fans are not going to be like your typical home fans. Yeah, there'll be more Ram fans than Bengal fans, but there's going to be a lot of pretty people, a lot of people that are just there to be seen. And football, to me, it's always about the crowd more than it's about the friendly confines, right? This is not baseball where you could take advantage of the turf or the configurations of the ballpark. It's usually we like to be home because of the elements and because of the crowd. Well, the elements are going to be pretty much, you know, neutral. Obviously, there's not going to be any snow or rain or anything like that. And the crowd is going to be maybe not neutral, but certainly not going to feel like your typical home game for the Rams.
But when you talk about, like, home field advantage, let's say that every single person in SoFi Stadium is a Ram fan and they're loud. Is it going to be louder than what the Bengals overcame at Arrowhead?
No chance.
Right?
No chance.
There is no world in which that's possible.
Right. That's one of the loudest venues other than Seattle in the entire country.
So much so, Michael. It's such a great point by you. Did you guys notice at kickoff just the decibel of Arrowhead that game? Mm-hmm. Before? When they kicked off, I was like, wow. They are head and shoulders above everywhere, the sound there. It comes through on TV. You're right. There's no world in which that's possible. In fact, I mean, San Francisco completely outmanned the Rams at SoFi 2 weeks ago.
And at SoFi, in a Rams home game, in the NFC Championship game, Matthew Stafford had to go with a silent count. That's how little home field advantage they have. So, no, I don't think that plays into it at all, at all. Let's go to Danny in Long Island. Danny.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's a very sad day. It's our last football Friday. And if Major League Baseball doesn't get some progress, Don will be giving us his soup list next week, top five soups.
Oh, I love that.
Really, I love to do that anyway.
I mean, you can break that into creams and broths. But as far as the game is concerned, I agree with a little bit of what everybody said, which is the conundrum. I agree with Peter that the quarterback of the Rams, he's not below a four intercept game. You never know. He has played down at times. I agree with their offense is capable of Bengals. They have Chase. They have Boyd. They have Higgins. They have just as many weapons. They have a great tight end. The defensive line for the Rams is the standalone unit of this game. They can not only get to the quarterback, but they stuff the run. Sometimes you have one or the other. They do both. So they're going to present an unusual problem for Cincinnati. He's not going to be able to run the ball, and they do have a good running back. He's underrated. But I agree that that defensive line is going to take over the game, similar to what we saw last week. Last year, when you see Mahomes, who, yes, he's mobile, but he's running around like a chicken without a head, throwing the ball down, and interceptions happen, deflected passes happen, the strip sack mentioned. And that's why I think the Rams are going to win the game. But I'm not going to bet it because Matthew Stafford is not Tom Brady from last year. The three-intercept game for him is not out of the question. And the Bengals play a zone defense, which he's not good at. He's very good on man-to-man because his receivers are outstanding. I'll tell you one other fun fact. There's no weather? Heat advisory. A heat advisory in Los Angeles on Sunday. When's the last time we had that problem in the Super Bowl?
I think the last time it was played in Los Angeles was the hottest Super Bowl. Now, the SoFi Stadium roof, the panels do open, but doesn't mean it's going to get cooler. You're just going to let hot air in. But I don't know if that plays that much of a factor. You know, the Bengals probably practice, you know, before the season starts in a hot weather situation. So I don't know if that's going to be a factor either. But it is going to be very, very hot. Very hot. I think it'd probably make the fans more uncomfortable. 1-800-919-3776. We go to Jason in New Jersey. Jason.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for taking my call, as always.
You got it. What's up?
Good. So I just want to give first a shout-out to my cousin Lou Manalpin, of course, getting on before me. He was going to make some of the same points that he was going to make. But I do agree, though, that with the Super Bowl, that the defensive line for the Rams is the biggest key. And what do you guys expect for the cornerback position for the Rams? Is Ramsey going to be covering Chase one-on-one, or are they going to put – Ramsey on Higgins and maybe double Chase and kind of do something different, kind of take away the second option and double the first option?
Well, that's all going to depend on can they get pressure sending just four. And if they do, well, then they can have the luxury of doubling Chase. If they feel like they've got a blitz, well, then you're going to get those one-on-one situations. And that's what kind of exposed the Chiefs. That's why this is so fascinating, guys, because you would think the Rams would be able to get there just sending four.
But let's say they send four and you can double. Do you double Chase then and then put Jalen Ramsey on Higgins? Because Jalen Ramsey wants Ja'Marr Chase. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play that.
Well, Ramsey's good. He may be a pain in the butt, but
he's a great player
that can handle Chase one-on-one. But, you know, getting him some help, it wouldn't be bad. It really, I guess, depends on how the game is going, but that's the guy that you get scared of. They can really change the game because he's so good.
Well, it's game time, everybody. Brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. We're talking about the Super Bowl on Sunday, the Rams and the Bengals. But tonight, just one New York team is in action, the New York Islanders in Edmonton. And you could actually see that on ESPN+. Plus, it's a 9 p.m. Drop of the puck. That's it. The Knicks and the Nets are off. That's game time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly.
And that game can be heard on 98.7. Coverage 8:30 after Carlin, 9 o'clock faceoff. And the Boston Bruins have opened the door for the Islanders to possibly make a run here.
How so?
Because the Islanders are 15 points back. That's a lot. But they've got five games in hand. Boston just lost Brad Marchand because he's a moron and gets suspended six games because he thought it was a good idea to punch a goalie in the head and then jab his stick in the guy's face.
Can't do that.
In Tristan Jarry, which was ridiculous. Tuukka Rask forced to retire because of the hip injury. Boston not playing well. He got shut out 6-0 by the Hurricanes. So Boston's got that last playoff spot. So if the Islanders win their games in hand, I know it's going to be tough. They can... All they have to do is be 5 points better than Boston the rest of the way if they're able to do that. And the way Boston is right now, they might be able to make some hay. Edmonton just fired their coach, Dave Tippett, so Islanders might find a way here. But they got to just keep winning.
Be gone.
All right, we'll come back. We'll take more phone calls. We have Chris Russo at 4 o'clock. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
I have a story out on ESPN Plus about how the Harden thing came down, and it's amazing. He played the Nets in a bad, bad way. The story details about they knew there were trouble. There was going to be trouble. He showed up in training camp this year, extremely overweight. He's not in his 20s anymore. They said on this last West Coast trip where the Nets were on, he stayed out late all night, never got his rest, didn't seem like he was engaged. Every time he spoke to Joe Tsai and Sean Marks, when they asked him, are you all in? He said, well, if there's a problem, you'll hear from me. Because he did not want to be the guy to ask out for second place in 13 months. And so the Nets just found no urgency to make a deal because the guy was telling them that he, in fact, wanted to be there. And if he didn't want to be there, he would tell them. But then the clock was running down toward the trade deadline, and finally he had to be a man about it. And he FaceTimed Tsai and Sean Marks, the GM, and said, I want out. I want to play in Philadelphia. And that's when the talk started to accelerate. But this guy has not covered himself in glory at all. They play one more time this year, and that's going to be in Philly. But if they happen to meet in the playoffs, Net fans should boo this guy every time he touches the ball. He has, I mean, what he did to this organization, the amount of draft capital that they gave up, the players they give up to get him, and then he never was fully engaged. It's just amazing to me. It's amazing to me. And this story makes him look even worse. He continued to lie to the owner and the GM when all the players knew that he was not fully in. He was not living a life that would accentuate how he, you know, should play now that he's 32, about to be 33, still staying out to all hours of the night and partying, and, you know, even on the West Coast. And he actually told them after he was on FaceTime, I'm going back to Houston. I'm not going to stay with the team until this gets done. This guy is, it's brutal. It's just brutal what he did.
And I'd love to hear somebody defend it. There's always that guy out there that will say, I agree with James Harden. How could you agree with it? At least when we're talking about the Odell stuff, it was maturity. He's a 32-year-old man who had done this before. I just don't get how a player could do that. Hey, listen, you want out, you want out. It's not what you thought. Maybe Brooklyn wasn't what you thought. The Kyrie situation was a mess. All right, I get it. So go talk to management and say, let's work out a deal. I'm not going to re-sign here. I don't want to be here. We'll keep it quiet. I'll still play hard for you, but I'd really appreciate it if you made a deal. But he's got to come into camp overweight, not play to the best of his ability when you know he can fight through injuries. He did it last year. How do you do that? How do you do it to your teammates? How do you look your teammates in the eye? Do you think you're that special? You're so much better than everybody else that you don't take into account how your teammates feel, guys that are busting their butt to stay in this league, that are not going anywhere, that want to win a championship just as bad as you, but because they're not as skilled as you, they're not as good as you, that means they get disrespected by you? How would you be able to walk in that room and look your teammates in the face doing that?
He probably has no problem doing it.
Well, then that's a problem with him.
He's a diva.
Well, that's a – come on. Listen, I get the diva behavior, but we're talking about a very select few that took it to this level twice.
I mean, you saw last night. I mean, Kevin Durant's response, he's obviously disgusted and angry. But then even LeBron, who doesn't have a dog in the fight, was still laughing. It's not good for his legacy, man. Talent-wise, what's Harden potentially? A top 25 player? Top 30 player all time, maybe? He's a great player.
I know.
Like, it's a killer for his legacy.
But you know what? For the LeBron Jameses of the world, the Kevin Durants of the world, call him out. Because you know what? It also reflects poorly on your sport. Don't you want to send a message out to every young guy who's thinking of doing the same thing? Because right now the message is if you do it right, you can get out. You can go wherever you want. And if somebody like LeBron James or Kevin Durant call him out, hammer him publicly, and say there's no room for that in our league, there's no room for that in our sport, embarrass him, and send a message to all the young guys who think that they could take the same path. Because that's what I worry about, that this now becomes a thing. That anytime somebody is stuck in a situation they don't like, that they can pull a Harden and go anywhere they want and win a championship. Well, I wish some people – I know players don't like to call each other out, but come on. There's more important things in the world here than relationships with other players.
But
there's
one
reputation on the line.
One thing that the Nets have to be careful about Kyrie did the same thing in Boston, the same thing. Now, he eventually became a free agent and was able, but he wanted out of there. He just shut it down. So he used the same playbook that Harden has now used twice in 13 months. Now, here's Kevin Durant on TNT last night, his reaction to the trade.
I'm excited for our team. Looking forward to finishing the season out with these new group and these new players. And, you know, it's playoffs right around the corner, so we got to fast track into, you know, getting used to each other. But I'm excited. You know, I think everybody got what they wanted. I feel like we got versatile players, so we'll have to figure it out and figure out what works for us. But I'm just happy that we got guys that want to be a part of this.
That was his little shot. Now, Sean Marks spoke today. The GM, and he was asked why he traded Harden.
I think with this, you know, there's a lot of those conversations that obviously have to remain private, as you would respect, and everybody understands it. And if James wants to allude to those decisions and speak for himself, obviously totally happy for him to do that. I think it's just a feeling. It's a feeling when you know, look, this is not working, whether it's on the court, off the court, you know, for a variety of different circumstances. Again, you know, I give James credit for being open, upfront, and honest. And again, like, that's the way this organization has prided itself on. And it's not like neither side did not want this to work. It was more sense of like, look, this is the right time and it's the right thing to do is to move on now. And James has been up front from day one was, you know, the clock is ticking for him. He wants to win a championship and we do too. And if he feels like this was not the right place to win a championship and we felt like we could continue with our goals of being that last team standing, you know, by making a trade, that's why we made the deal.
Now, Kyrie reacted to the trade after the loss last night to Washington.
To be honest with you, and I think this is something that's not spoken about often in our industry or in our business. It's just, you know, you never really know what people are going through or what they're going to decide to do. And you got to sit back and respect their wishes. And, you know, that's what I do. And, you know, for James, we've had so much history in our day and age, even playing together or even just watching each other from afar, and it's a mutual respect. So I can't really say that you feel that in the locker room, so to say, but, you know, we get hints, and, you know, and we just wish him well, and we want him to be ultimately successful. And now we move forward with the guys that are coming in. We're excited.
Now, Marks was asked Kyrie's vaccination status. Was that a problem for Harden? He said, look, I don't want to speak for Harden on that. That was never explicitly expressed from him. I think the most frustrated person in this whole thing is Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie is frustrated with the fact that he's not able to be out there. I mean, all of our conversations have been like, look, I want to be there, want to be around the team. He's obviously hoping for things to look different in the future here and for him to be able to participate in home and road games. So, again, there's a factor of a few things. Really, is Kyrie really that frustrated? Guy, it's kind of an easy thing to change.
It's a difficult spot for these teams to be in, Michael. It reminds me a lot of the college football landscape with these coaches that violate contracts, break contracts to go someplace else. None of the schools will ever call the coach out because they're going to get their next coach the same way. So these teams all have to be careful. Like, I don't want to sit there and call James Harden out because, hey, we might benefit from it the next time somebody wants to get out of their situation. And you make a good point. KD probably doesn't want to call out Harden because he followed Kyrie, who did the same thing in Boston. But a guy like LeBron James, who never has a problem giving his opinion, Peter, ever. And as much as you might hate LeBron James, every time he left to go someplace, he went when his contract was up.
Yep.
So he represents the NBA. He's the face of the NBA. Don't make a joke about it. Call him out.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't know. Don, so you're saying in one breath LeBron does everything the right way. Does he also have to call them out?
No.
Doesn't he show it because he does it the right way?
Yeah, but he does. It's not his responsibility. It's Durant's.
But, you know, like you said, well, then people will call Durant out for saying, well, why'd you follow Kyrie? And he quit on Boston.
Well, how about this? It's right. Durant, people will say, even if they don't have the story exactly right, that he bailed in OKC and Golden State. Kyrie, they're right to say it, he completely quit on Boston, or that's how it felt, certainly to me as a fan. My question is, does Sean Marks have to be that nice? Like, does this team have any teeth whatsoever? Like, as an organization, like, don't get me wrong, I love the Barclays Center. I really do. I love the Nets in general. They've treated me like with class from day one. Love them. They're a really friendly place to deal with, and they move in a high-class way. Sometimes, man, it's like too high class, though. Yeah. But between Nash and Marks, they're never willing to even utter a coarse sound about anyone, no matter how they disrespect the franchise.
But how could they? They got Harden that way. If they had a problem with Harden doing to them what he did in Houston, then why did you trade for him in the first place?
But they also took advantage. Ben Simmons has pulled the same thing that Harden pulled. Pulled the same thing.
Unfortunately, you're put in this situation where this is the game that's being played, and at the end of the day, you want to make sure there's chairs for you to sit in when the music ends. That's why I look at LeBron, who's got nothing to lose. He's the face of the franchise. He's done it the right way. And I don't think he's got any skeletons in his closet where anybody could call him out. And even if somebody did call him out, what does he care? He gets called out all the time anyway. He's never had an issue giving you his opinion politically, basketball-wise. I think it would go a long way if he called Harden out. But these players all sing kumbaya, and that's why they feel like they can get away with it.
But, Don, the way that he was laughing and covering his face last night,
that's
Michael,
it
you
all.
Saw it.
Absolutely.
That was calling out Harden.
And also, players don't do player-on-player crime for the most part. They just don't. They stick together because they're for the grace of God go I. Maybe LeBron's going to pull the same act at some point with the Lakers. We have no idea. He's never going to say anything. But the guy that should have said something is Harden. He doesn't like playing here, and he essentially did.
Not Harden, it's Durant.
He doesn't like playing here. Well, I'm glad we have people that want to play here. But again, they just acquired another malcontent who had 4 years left on his contract and still wouldn't play. Now, it has nothing to do with his mental problems. He says he's having mental issues. Okay, we have to all be very, very sensitive to that. But this started before that happened, before the mental issues became even public. He just didn't want to play. He didn't want to play for the Sixers. He demanded a trade. And Daryl Morey said, no, we're not going to trade you. You can stay here for 4 years. I'll only trade you if I get back what I want. Yeah. He finally got back what he wanted. Here's your malfeasance for my malfeasance.
Well, you know, like Carlin said yesterday, and you even just said it because that's now the politically correct thing to do. You can't rip Simmons because he said he had a mental issue. And there's a stigma calling out people with mental issues. Which means if he faked this, Michael, it's disgusting. That you're using something that is a legit issue and just using it as a shield to go do what you want to do. Now, maybe he does have. Maybe him being in Philadelphia and called out in Philadelphia and ripped by the fans did create this. And if it did, hey, that's awful for him. But if this is just a way for him to be able to get what he wants and then call out an issue that's impossible to call somebody on because it's politically incorrect, there are a lot of people that suffer in this world every single day with mental illness that don't have millions of dollars and don't have the ability to play professional basketball to be able to help them get through it. And if he legitimately has it, hey, but if this is just a way to be able to get out of Dodge, come on.
And also,
really.
In Ramona and Woj's story, it's revealed that Harden consulted throughout the season with different agents about how he can leave the Nets. He's gutless. That's what he is. He's gutless. He doesn't have the courage of his own convictions. If you want to leave because you don't like Kyrie, say it. Tell Marks. Tell Sy. You know, they could put together a better deal and not have to scramble over the last 3 days because you finally go face-to-face and actually show some guts and say, I don't want to be here. Instead, go behind the scenes. Gutless. For a great player, boy, is he gutless.
And especially when you consider how Marks still takes the high road. So Marks was never going to call out Harden. All he had to do is go there and say, I just want out. Trade me. I'll play hard for you, but please promise me that when we get to the deadline, you're going to trade me. Marks wouldn't have called him out. It wouldn't even be a difficult conversation to have.
Now, let's take a brief time out. We'll take your phone calls on this. Return to football on the 5 o'clock hour. Super Bowl's coming up on Sunday. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So now it's coming out that Harden had his feelings hurt. Because, you know, he continually beat Kyrie continually beat him in practice when Kyrie wasn't even in shape.
Huh?
Yeah.
Diva.
Well, you know, you're getting to people on Twitter. I'd like to debate you. I'm going to call up and
Come
win
on.
You over. You can't win me over. You can't. And stop giving me Anthony Davis. Stop giving me, you know, Matthew Stafford. Listen, there's been guys that have asked out of organizations that, where they didn't have a chance to win. And in a lot of cases, it's celebrated. We always bring up Ray Bourque, you know, going to Colorado. It's not the leaving. It's how you left. Nobody, I think, would kill him, Michael, if he just went to the offices, went to Marks, went to sides. You got to trade me. This is not what I thought. Kyrie's driving me crazy. I don't like it here in Brooklyn. I made a huge mistake. Trade me. I'd understand that. I get it. But how do you defend coming in out of shape? How do you defend not trying? How could you possibly defend that? And for anybody to think that's a way to go through life in the real world, good luck. Good luck being a professional if you think that's the way to get out of jobs and get out of relationships and get out of things you don't want to do in life. It might work for James Harden, who's a singular talent. Good luck pulling that in the real world.
Yeah, the only way to root with stuff like this is to have it explode in the team's face that makes the move to get him. You hope that it explodes in the Sixers' face like it exploded in the Nets' face. You can't reward people that just cash out on their job because they don't want to be there. They just quit. That's what Harden did in Houston. He just quit, and the Nets couldn't gobble him up quickly enough. No, and then he quit on the Nets, and the Sixers couldn't gobble him up quickly enough. Let's go to Frank in Syracuse. Frank.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Happy birthday to Don and belated to you, Michael.
Thanks. We can hardly hear you, Frank. Are you on a speakerphone?
Forget what.
All right, we're going to move on.
No, goodbye. Let's go to Lewis.
Who's this?
In Newark. Lewis.
Yeah, wanted to mention a couple of things. First, I know the issues with Kyrie and probably Daryl Morey poaching James Harden, but also, how are we discrediting the fact that James Harden maybe didn't like Brooklyn, the city? I mean, this is a guy that's from Cali, gets drafted to OKC, then goes to Houston. All of a sudden, Brooklyn's a, you know, maybe like the jungle to this guy.
And okay, second, okay. So, but if that's the case, Lewis, then just go tell the front office I want to go. Why would you bail on your team and fake things?
Oh no, there's no defending that at all. But and the second thing I wanted to mention, you guys mentioned how the Brooklyn Nets organization has handled itself with class, and that the Nets fans should boo him when they go back when he goes back to Brooklyn. They should celebrate this guy because I think that Brooklyn really got a haul and they're much better now without him.
No, they didn't get a haul. Look what they gave up for him. They gave up three first-round draft picks, and Houston has the right to flip the other four in the alternating years. And they gave up Jared Allen. And they gave up Caris LeVert. They gave up a haul. They didn't get that back. Ben Simmons could be a singular talent. They got back one non-lottery-protected pick. And then another one that is 1-8 protected. They didn't get a haul back. They gave a haul out. They are less than they were before they made the trade. Sorry. Jared Allen has signed a big contract with Cleveland. And by the way, Cleveland's ahead of Brooklyn right now.
Well, losing 10 straight will do that, Michael.
Yes. It'll put you in the play-in. All right, let's take a brief timeout. Rams and the Bengals. We'll make our picks in the 5 o'clock hour. We have Mike Tannenbaum on at 5:30. It's Kayla Greca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Michael K. Show.
Chris Mad Dog Russo, who do you like this Sunday?
I like Cincinnati, guys. I like him in 24-21. I think it's their time. The franchise has been to two of these and lost two tough games. They came from 21-3 down 2 weeks ago. I think sometimes, you know, the stars are aligned right, and I kind of think they might be aligned right for the Bengals. And I don't like the way the Rams finish some of these games. They should have put San Francisco away long before they eventually did. I think the Rams can be a little sloppy. McVay was terrible with challenges and timeouts in the championship game against San Francisco. It's a hunch. Yes, I'm worried about the offensive line. I know how great Aaron Donald is. I get it, but I'll take Cincinnati.
The Michael Kay Show.
Don't cut me out already, man.
Well, you're never in.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right. Rams and the Bengals, the long football season ends on Sunday, February 13th, a.k.a. Don's birthday, and it should be a beauty. It's shaping up to be an interesting game. People are split on which way it's going to go. The line is not that big. It's, according to where you're seeing it, 3.5 or 4, that's not much of a line. So I'm looking forward to it. They're obviously, the biggest key, I think, is will Cincinnati be able to protect Burrow? Because when they don't protect Burrow and he's sacked 5 or more times in a game, the Bengals are 2-4 this year. So it's significant. Now, one of the games they did win was when he was sacked 9 times by Tennessee. But, and it's a big but, the Rams are different than Tennessee. Matthew Stafford is different than Ryan Tannehill. I think the Rams could make them pay. Ryan Tannehill did not. He had an awful game, and that's why Tennessee did not win a game where they sacked the quarterback 9 times. I don't think that the Rams will let something like that slip away. Now, on the flip side, I think the Rams have all of the pressure in this game. All of it. Now, no one gets to this point and says, well, we're playing with the house's money. I think that's ridiculous. Of course, Cincinnati desperately wants to win this game. Joe Burrow desperately wants to win this game. I understand that. But the team that has to win the game would be the LA Rams. The amount of draft capital they've invested in putting this team together, they have gone the complete opposite of the way most teams build their teams. They do not covet draft picks. They do not hoard them. They give them away. If they see a player that they like, they will give first-round draft picks. They did it for Jalen Ramsey. They gave away draft picks for Von Miller. They gave away money, obviously, for Odell Beckham. They gave away a truckload of stuff to the Lions for Matthew Stafford. Now you've got to make this work. You've got to win with this team. This is a veritable all-star team. If you come away and don't win, well, what's really out there for the future for you? You have completely ravaged the first couple of rounds of your draft in the next 4 or 5 years. Don, this is their chance to win. They've got to cash in the chips. As Jim Fossil said, they pushed all their chips to the middle of the table. Now you got to win the hand. This is the hand.
Well, and it's been a while now. I mean, if you go back to 2018 when they lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and I remember going into that season and throughout the season, we had Steve Young on. You remember this, Peter. Steve would say the only team that could beat the Rams are themselves. Like he felt they were that good, and that was with Goff. And that was before Ramsey, and that was before Odell, and that was before getting Von Miller. Like, that's how good this team has been now for the better part of a half a decade. And what ends up happening is that they have beaten themselves, whether it's in the regular season or in the postseason, and they finally said enough. It's time for us to go out and get the legit quarterback. They said that they believed that they were a quarterback away. So they invest their future to get Stafford. Then in the middle of a season that was very pedestrian for most of the beginning of the year, it's like, well, we got to go out and get Odell. Oh, we've got to go out and trade for Von Miller. So they've doubled, tripled, quadrupled down over the last few years to get better. And now they're back here again. And they're not taking on the New England Patriots. They're taking on a Cinderella story Cincinnati team. And I think the theme is the same. If Cincinnati wins this game, I think it's going to be because the Rams again beat themselves. And that's why, Peter, you're not wrong to think about Cincinnati. But for me, if you're going in thinking, oh, Stafford's going to blow it, he's going to throw 3 picks and a pick six, well, then that's the Rams beating themselves. If the Rams play well, I don't see them losing.
It's a fair argument and a reasonable argument. This is the Super Bowl for the Rams to win. This is what they're built for. How often does a coach have this many weapons on both sides of the ball everywhere? I mean, when you think about the absolute talent assembled on the Rams team, as I said earlier, I feel like they should be favored by even more than 4 points. But at the same time, there is something about this team that has a hard time, and I think, Michael, you've intimated you agree. Something about this team, maybe it's Sean McVay, that has a hard time pushing on the gas for 4 quarters. And I know there are people who think this game's not going to be close. I think those are people who are refusing to accept that at this point in the year, Cincinnati might have been 10-7 in the regular season, but at this point in the year, Cincinnati's there for a reason. They are a really, really good football team with a great quarterback who has ice in his veins. So, listen, I ultimately, we'll get to our pick shortly. It's not like I don't like the Rams in this game at
Pick them.
No, I'm not going to. I like Cincinnati to cover the points, though. I think we're going to get a game that comes down to a last possession. I think when people see this as a blowout, they're just assuming, they're looking at everything X's and O's, and they're looking at the matchup of the Bengals offensive line and the Rams defensive front, and they're saying Joe Burrow's going to be staring at the top of SoFi Stadium all day long. He's not going to have a chance. But let's let the game play out and see what Zach Taylor comes up with. Because there's no way, guys, that if yo-yos like us are aware of what the deficiencies are of this Cincinnati Bengals offense, that Zach Taylor's not aware of that. So I'm curious to see what they come with. And, man, can you guys imagine the pressure on McVay if he not only loses his second Super Bowl in the last 3 years, but loses it to a guy who was on his tree and is a couple years, I believe, a couple years younger than him in Zach Taylor.
No, he's older than him.
Taylor's older?
Yeah, McVay's 35, and Taylor's 38. So they're the two youngest coaches to coach against each other. But the interesting thing is he had an excuse last time. He got schooled, by the way. I think McVay's 36. He got schooled by Bill Belichick. Now, everybody gets schooled by Bill Belichick.
Right.
And he has admitted, and some of his assistants from that time, Belichick did things that they did not expect him to do. That's what great coaches do. But they lost that game 13-3, and McVay, here he is, saying, telling us what he learned from that last Super Bowl.
I'll never run away from the fact that I didn't do a good enough job for our team, you know, within what I feel like, you know, my role and responsibility is to these guys. I don't think you press, you know, when you do get another opportunity to be in this moment, in this stage again. I think you look at it as a blessing. You take some of those learning lessons, you apply them, and let's go cut it loose and play to the best of our ability, and I'll coach to the best of my ability with our coaches as well.
I think the world of this guy as a coach, okay? But he does get tight in tight games. As Tampa Bay was coming back, that offense went completely conservative. He got away from everything that he had done to take the lead and almost lost the game. Almost lost the game. So he cannot do that. And remember, Zach Taylor is off of McVay's coaching tree. So he knows a lot of McVay's tricks. He might be able to head him off at the pass. It's going to be very, very interesting to see this coaching matchup. And one other thing that you don't even think about, right? So Andrew Marchand is in L.A. writing about the media, and he said that there is some thought that McVay could say, you know, I'm going to go into broadcasting, and he would command $10 million a year, which is more than he makes as the Ram coach. And then if he does that and just does broadcasting for, what, 4 years, and then all of a sudden he's 40 years old, he could pick and choose whatever team he wants to go to. So that's another aspect of this, because I think he'd be unbelievable in broadcasting. He has a memory like Sheldon Cooper on Big Bang Theory. He can go back and give you plays from like 6 years ago, exactly how they were run and how many yards they gained. So he has that kind of memory, and he seems like he's got a great personality, good looking. So if he wants to get away from the wear and tear, he can do it.
I'm sorry. I hate to be a hater, and I know I sound bitter and jaded and annoyed, but I am who I am, Don, right? I can only fight against myself so much. I'm so sick of the salivating over everyone who could put together three sentences in football. Oh, my God, he's going to be the best person who'd ever come to TV. Like, if you can manage to know something about football and put together four consecutive sentences, there is a network who will pay you $10 million a year. I've never heard Sean McVay talk and go, oh, my God, the charisma. I need to hear more.
Stop yourself. It's so ridiculous. I mean, obviously, anybody that's coached into a Super Bowl, they know the game of football. But Peter's right. It's almost like, oh my God, he said two words without let's give him $18 million.
Oh my God, when Greg Olsen showed up, and they were able to see a player who was active a year ago, and in fact, he did a game while he was playing. Oh my God, he's capable of talking right now and actually speaking about the game that he's played for his entire life in a way that's remotely intelligible. It's the greatest thing ever. Yeah. And then the reality is you hear Greg Olsen, he's totally fine at his job. He's not going to become a legend in this field.
He looks like old Stifler.
he does look like old Stifler.
But again, I don't want to knock these guys. But it, and also, it's the one sport where it doesn't matter. You could put a cardboard cut at it, it'll still get 20 million viewers. It's ridiculous. Honestly.
So funny.
1-800-919-3776. Your thoughts on this game? Let's go to Mike. He is in Staten Island. Mike.
What's up, guys? Been on hold for a long time, but it's totally worth it now that I get to speak to you guys. Well,
thank you for holding.
Basically, I'm a hardcore Detroit Lions fan, huge Matthew Stafford fan. He's never gotten the respect that he deserves. I've watched every game for 12, 13 years of his, and I believe that Sunday he's going to prove to everyone that he is a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. And I believe the difference in this game is going to be the veteran leadership and experience of the Rams compared to the inexperience and the youth of the Bengals. I know Peter said something about Joe Burrow having ice in his veins. Matthew Stafford has ice in his veins. He's got 40-plus fourth-quarter comebacks.
But, Mike, wait 1 minute. I mean, you watched the 49er game? He almost threw that away. If that interception wasn't dropped, I mean, we might be having a different discussion right now. It could be the 49ers against the Bengals. So Stafford has thrown some interceptions in this postseason. He's thrown 17 on the season compared to Burrow's 14. So I think he's an outstanding quarterback. But everybody's – even our buddy Dan Orlovsky, they're putting him in Canton.
Yeah.
But I think he'll go if he wins this game.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, but okay. Sometimes you could see greatness even on a bad team. Now, you watched the Detroit Lions all those years, and you thought, well, Matthew Stafford can play. But did you ever think, wow, this guy is unbelievable?
Well,
now, football people say it, but he did make 3 playoff games with the Lions. They lost all 3.
But it's the Lions.
I get, but they still made the playoffs, Don. They made the playoffs.
Maybe by the grace of just his ability to be able to get them into the playoffs.
But do you look at this guy? What I'm asking, do you look at this guy and see Aaron Rodgers?
Oh.
Do you see Tom Brady? Do you see Patrick Mahomes? I don't. I think he's a nice quarterback.
He's a level above nice, Michael.
But he's a level below elite.
I don't know.
You think he's on the level of Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I mean, if he was a Packer his whole career and Aaron Rodgers was in Detroit, how do we know that Aaron Rodgers doesn't go in the exact same direction? I mean, look at some of the stats that this guy had. Now, he had Megatron. He had a really good wide receiver for a good portion of his career.
But he has 323 touchdowns to 161 interceptions.
He threw for, you know, he's thrown for 5,000 yards.
And then just below 5,000 yards.
Yeah, I mean,
I think he's really, really good.
But
I don't think he's on a trash team. Okay, I know that in Detroit Airport they're selling Detroit Rams shirts. I get it; they love him. And we were talking about Harden. He got out of Detroit in the right way, in a classy way. He didn't make it public, and he got dealt. But let's see what he does in this big game.
No,
because he has not been foolproof in all of these playoff games.
I get that. And Aaron Rodgers certainly has had his deficiencies too.
Yep.
Now he's won his one Super Bowl. But at 23 years old, all right, basically his first full year in the league, he threw for 5,000 yards, 41 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. Detroit went 10-6. He's 23 years old. And then 4-12 the next year, 7-9 after that. Then they go 11-5 when he's a 26-year-old and had an okay season then. And then again, you know, 7-9, 9-7, 9-7, a lot of that had to do with him. And then his last 3 years in Detroit, 6-10, he was hurt, 3-4-1, and then 5-11. Nobody's ever won in Detroit, ever. And again, I'll be the first to admit it. It's not like Detroit's your destination on Sunday when you're flipping around NFL Sunday ticket, even with Stafford. All right. It wasn't like they were on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football routinely. So this and a lot of it just kind of looking at the statistics. But tell me if he's a Chief with Andy Reid as his head coach. If he's in Green Bay,
we don't know. All we know is what we see.
We don't know. Well, but we see. But you also have to. He's in the outside of Cleveland. It's like the worst place for a quarterback to be. And he put up amazing numbers and did sneak into the playoffs a couple of times. But we don't know that any other quarterback would have done better in Detroit. Nobody else has, you know, before or since. You know, so, listen, is he Tom Brady? Is he Aaron Rodgers? No, I would have him underneath there. But if this guy wins a Super Bowl, he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, the only thing I disagree with you on, Michael, is that you kind of mocked a little bit when you said people act like he's on the first in the Hall of Fame. But if he wins, I'm with Don. He is. He's going straight to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I agree. But I think there's levels in the Hall of Fame, too.
Sure,
so you could say, well, you know, so Big Mars on Twitter goes, Kay is bashing Stafford's player. I'm not bashing anything, so I don't know what you're listening to. But Aaron Rodgers fell multiple times in the playoffs, a much better team, which we have noted over and over and over again. over and over and over again. And that's on his resume. So that's why I say there's a lot of pressure on the Rams on Sunday, because if Stafford doesn't do well, I think Chris Russo made a good point. Unless he's the reason for the loss, he's not going to get excoriated for it. But if he has a bad game and throws a big pick, that's going to have an effect on his legacy. It is. But he can complete the legacy by having an a Phil Simms type of game on Sunday. Let's see what he does.
Now, listen, I think we'll see what they're able to keep together for next year. You know, I don't think this team, I know that they are not built for a future, but I also don't think that their window is over tomorrow on Monday. So it'll also be interesting to see how much he can do over the next several years there. And you could end up going, Michael, from you thought about, oh, I wonder what Matt Stafford will be, to he's just an absolute all-time great over the next few years. And I don't know that we're going to get that. To the point you made earlier, there's a bet out there, I believe, Stafford to score on FanDuel. You could bet, I think, Stafford to throw for over 303 touchdowns. That pays out at plus 350. Because guess what, guys? Quarterbacks, with the exception of that insane Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl a few years ago, quarterbacks don't typically do that much damage in the Super Bowl. It's always a weird game in that regard.
I mean, there are instances that they did. You know, I mentioned like Phil Simms against the Broncos had one of the perfect games of all time.
Right. But how often, Don, how often, when you think of Super Bowls, how many, like that bet, for example, how often do you think of 303 touchdowns in a Super Bowl?
303 yards, you mean?
303 touchdowns, that would be something.
So, I don't think he's getting 300.
Yeah. Hold on, no. 300 yards and three touchdowns.
I don't think he'll do that.
That's a big. That's a big Super Bowl performance.
Yeah, but even when you talk about the Phil Simms, 22 of 25, he didn't throw for 300 yards.
Right.
Now I look at Matthew Stafford and I go, "There's nobody tougher in the NFL than him. No one.
No.
The amount of punishment he took in Detroit.
Right.
And he, one time he separated his left shoulder, stayed in the game to throw a pass. Don't come tougher than that. Let's see what he does on Sunday. I'm not going to judge his whole career on Sunday, but I still don't put him on the level of Mahomes and Rodgers and Brady. I just don't at this point.
No, listen, he's not ever going to be on the level of Rodgers and Brady skill set as a quarterback. I don't think he'll ever be on that level. But I think on the one, whatever the one is right below that, that's where I think Stafford is.
I think he's above Eli.
He's above Ben.
He's above Phillip Rivers.
Yep.
So he's in a really nice, sweet spot.
But he's not. No, I'm with you. I don't disagree. And I agree with you that the playoffs have been bad. Not only the turnovers that happened against Tampa, but when he put the ball on the ground and recovered it himself and almost ended the game right there. It has not been completely glorious throughout the playoffs. But when you talk about over half of his wins being requiring fourth quarter comebacks or game-winning drives, he is a dude who has a tendency to be a stud. He is built for this moment.
But, again, everything. Whenever you have stats, you can play with them whichever way you want. So he had that game-winning drive to get to field goal position against the Tampa Bay Bucs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he completely shut it down and blew a 24-point lead. So then he had to step up and do it. So the only reason he had that come from behind or that last drive brilliance was because the offense shut down. Now, I don't know if that's Sean McVay's fault or not. So would that last drive wouldn't happen. He wouldn't have had to hit that bomb. Just saying, I don't want to be the hater on Matthew Stafford. I think it's a great story. I wish great things for him. But, you know, let's calm down a little. A little bit.
Also, but when you're blaming that, you're really gonna put that on Stafford as much as you put it on McVay? I would say
I think it's more McVay. But also, I mean, they lost control of themselves. Akers with the fumble, Cooper Kupp, who never coughed the ball. I mean, they did everything wrong. I think McVay got tight.
Stafford played three playoff games in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for this? At New Orleans, 28 of 43, 380 yards, three touchdowns, two picks. They lost the game 45-28. Quarterback rating of 97.
Again, you can also judge that differently. They're probably behind the whole game, and they allowed him to throw. But go ahead.
But he still threw for 380 yards and three touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
The 24-20 loss at Dallas. Again, all these on the road. 28 of 42, 323, one touchdown, one pick. And then at Seattle, where nobody wins in the playoffs, lost 26-6. He was 18-32, 205 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. So when you take a look at going into this year, 0-3, all on the road, and again, I'd have to go and break down the games, like how much it was his fault, but those are pretty good numbers in the postseason where I can't really say they had, and I'm sure they were massive dogs in all those games. You know, a playoff game in the Superdome, a playoff game in Seattle. Those are probably daunting tasks, and it doesn't look like he embarrassed himself at all.
So if he wins the Super Bowl, he becomes only the second quarterback in NFL history to win a Super Bowl and have led the regular season in interception. Who's the other one?
I would guess Joe Namath.
Nope.
I would guess Brett Favre.
Nope.
I'm running out of quarterbacks that threw a lot of picks.
Yeah, you're not.
Wait. Ask the question one more time, Michael.
He would be only the second quarterback to win the Super Bowl and led the league in the regular season interceptions. He actually tied with Trevor Lawrence with 17.
How about Doug Williams?
No. How about a guest on the show this week?
Eli Manning?
Yeah.
There you go.
How about that?
Makes sense.
A little nugget. All right, this is a big segment coming up for Peter.
Sure.
If Tannenbaum picks the Bengals, Peter's done.
Yeah, I love Mike, and he knows football, but his picks have been dreadful. He thought that Kansas City was going to win in a blowout.
And also, he thought that New England was going to win in a blowout, remember?
Yeah, there was a blowout in that one.
Was in New England. I lost that one. All right, let's take a brief time out. Towel off. We'll have Mike Tannenbaum in his weekly segment coming up in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.